good to be with you tonight and to get to study for a few minutes with you again. I'd like to begin tonight by asking you to imagine a scene with me, and as you think with me about this picture, then ask yourself what's missing from it. Wintertime in New England. It's cold. It's a cold, wet wind is blowing. Smoke's pouring out of this chimney of a small two-story house. If you were to come close and kind of peek through the window in the kitchen, you'd see a scene that's kind of reminiscent of a Norman Rockwell painting. You know, inside there's this father and a mother and three children sitting around the table. You know, at first, you know, having dinner, at first glance it's kind of this portrait of the perfect American family. And it gives the illusion of emotional warmth. But if you stayed for a little bit, you'd find out that looks can be deceiving. For inside there's an emotional chill that cuts to the bone like the northern air that's blowing outside the house. And the American dream starts to disappear when the father reaches over and pops the nearest teenage daughter on the arm with the back of his hand, and the teenager fires back a smart remark, and the two begin their nightly yelling match. And the rest of the children join in with a chorus of jeers and little insults and laughing about what's happening. That is, all except the smallest child, the young boy who's sitting across from his father, wide-eyed, with his little heart pounding, and he's watching everything that's happening around the table, and he's wondering why his mother looks so sad, and he's wishing that things would be different. But at this home, it's always this way. Smart remarks, challenging looks, unrestrained anger. And before turning away from the window, we see the father jump up from his chair and slap his napkin down on his plate and say, "I never get any respect around here." And he shouts, "I'm leaving." He walks off. And the kids, you see, murmur under their breath, "Yeah, go ahead. We don't want you around here anyway." And they laugh. And then there's the little boy. It's been another night of conflict, another night of confrontation at the dinner table, and another layer of painful memories that he will take with him throughout his life. And this family, they were intimate strangers, always together, but forever apart. What's missing from this family? Well, I want us to read three passages, and two involve the family, and two involve brethren, or one involves brethren. Look in 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17, when Peter said, "Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, and honor the king." In one other passage, Ephesians chapter 6, turn fast, I'm just going to read these real quickly. And Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 through 3. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth." And then Romans chapter 12 and verse 10, when Paul said, "Be devoted to one another in brotherly love, give preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord." You see what's missing from this family? Not too hard, is it? Three times, three passages, is the word honor. And I want us to talk about tonight and raise the question, whatever happened to honor? Can't get this word right. Whatever happened to honor? What is it? What is it? What is it not? Where is it gone? And how should we get it back in relation to the family? Now, somebody may say, "Well, that's not that much of an important subject. We could come up with something a little bit more important to talk about than that, shouldn't we?" But the reason we ought to talk about things like this is because it has something to do with our relationship to God. You'll probably get tired of seeing me draw this before it's over. But I like you to think about the church like this. Here is Christ, and here is his body, and it is made up of individuals. I always like to spell it S-A-I-N-T-S. Put your name in here. And that's what the church is. It's people who have a relationship with Jesus Christ, and it is based on our doing his will. And whether we are part of his people or not is conditional upon us doing what he says. And if we don't, then Sam here gets taken out of the picture because he's not walking toward the will of God. And we do a really good job of that, making that application in terms of church organization and worship and what we do in worship. And those things are very important. And we do a very good job of that when it comes to how we behave ourselves in society and on our jobs and those sort of things. Those things are essential. But it also involves our family. And it involves how we treat each other, right? Because Jesus said, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And he said, the second greatest commandment is what? To love your neighbor as yourself. And who is your closest neighbor? Those people who live in your own household. Is that not true? And so we need to think about this question of honor. First of all, let's talk about this in terms of what is honor and what is not honoring. In the Old Testament, the word honor literally meant weighty or heavy. And in the New Testament, honor literally meant a valuing. Look, if you would, in Philippians 2, verse 29. I think this illustrates the idea. Philippians chapter 2, verse 29. Where Paul told this church, he said, receive him. He was talking about Epaphras or Epaphroditus who was sick. And he said, receive him then in the Lord with all joy and hold men like him in high regard or high esteem or hold them in honor. Value them. You know, and the idea is they are weighty. They are very important. Look, if you would, in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 18 and 19. Another verse that sort of illustrates this principle. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 18 and 19. Peter says, knowing that you, Christians, were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life inherited from your forefathers, but with precious blood, as of a lamb unblemished and spotless. The blood of Christ. The blood of God's Son is precious. It's extremely weighty. It's extremely valuable, heavy. It's weighted as much more valuable than perishable things like gold and silver. Honoring God is recognizing that nothing on earth or in heaven is as valuable, as weighty, or as significant as he is. He is more important than anything. And so when we honor a person, what we say to them is that they are extremely valuable in our eyes. That what they say carries great weight with us. And from passages that we will read, how we treat them indicates how precious they really are. Like if you would, in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Verse 23. The Corinthian church had a hard time valuing one another. They liked to exalt themselves. So Paul said to them in verse, why don't we start in 22? He says, on the contrary, it's much truer that the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary, and those members of the body which we deem less honorable, that is, we attach a lesser value, on these we bestow more abundant honor, and our less presentable members become much more presentable, whereas our more presentable members have no need of it. But God has so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to that member which lacked, so that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care one for another. So here you have this congregation that needed to learn what it meant to attach value to the to each person equally and esteem them as equals instead of exalting one person above the other. Now, just the opposite of that is dishonor. And we can, by what we say or how we treat someone, communicate to them that they are of very little value to us, that their words, in effect, carry very little weight with us in our eyes. The word dishonor in Jesus' day, I read, meant mist or steam. It was the word that the Greeks used to describe the steam that rolls off a boiling pot of water. It was the most insignificant thing that the Greeks could think of. I think the best example of dishonor is in Matthew chapter 27. Look if you're with me there. Matthew chapter 27. When Judas betrayed our Lord, he was paid for turning him in, turning him over to the religious authorities. And when they gave him their money, he threw it back at their feet because he realized the error that he had made. And in verse 9 of Matthew 27, Matthew chapter 27, verse 9, it says, "Then that which was spoken through Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled, and they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of the one whose price had been set by the sons of Israel." You can read in that with the word that is really there, they took the 30 pieces of silver, which the value of the one whose value had been set by the sons of Israel. That's a great illustration of dishonor, isn't it? Because they set the value of the precious Son of God at 30 pieces of silver. The dishonor is in the price. He was just of no value, or very little value. And this is sometimes, getting back to our focus tonight, this is sometimes what we can say about people in our family who we say we care about the most. So let's make that concrete. When we talk about the concept, valuing someone, let's talk about, make that concrete. There's a book that Gary Smalley did called Love is a Decision. And he did a survey in that book that was taken of families across the country, and they were asked the question, what are the top 10 most dishonoring acts in the home? Wally read for us today a few things that should teach us how to treat our wives, show them a little appreciation and respect and honor. And this is what was shown to be some of the most dishonoring acts in the home. So I want you to think about these for just a minute. Ignoring or degrading another person's opinions or advice or beliefs. It's a dishonoring act. It says, I don't really have a lot of use for what you think or what you say. Burying oneself in the television or newspaper when another person is trying to communicate with us. That's a little bit, gets a little bit closer to home, doesn't it? Very hard when I'm studying to take time out and to listen and focus on what somebody's telling me. Very hard. Or when I'm watching the football game, and it's the fourth quarter and it's the, there's only 2 minutes left and the game is tied and and somebody comes in and says, I really need to talk to you about something. And what do we do? Just hold on just a minute. But when we value one thing over another, we do that sometimes. Creating jokes about another person's weak areas or their shortcomings. That's devaluing. That's dishonoring to someone. We like to believe a lot of times people understand that we're just joking. And they do. A lot of times we can have really good relationships and we can joke with each other, tease each other. But if we're not really careful, there are places where we cross a line and we can hurt somebody. And we don't know it. And that is dishonoring to them. So we have to be considerate of people. When we make regular verbal attacks toward loved ones, criticizing them harshly, being judgmental, or delivering uncaring lectures, dishonoring acts. treating in-laws or other relatives as unimportant in one's planning or communication is dishonoring. You may not value your in-laws that much, but the other person does, and they feel it when we say make comments that are hurtful. Because in the next one, ignoring or simply not expressing appreciation for kind deeds that are done to us. We don't say thank you. We don't know how to show people that we appreciate what they've done. It's dishonoring. Distasteful habits that are practiced in front of the family, even when asked to stop. Overcommitting ourselves to other projects or people so that everything outside the home seems more important than those inside the home. It's a devaluing, dishonoring thing to do to people in our home. Power struggles that leave one person in the family feeling that he or she is a child or is being harshly dominated. It's devaluing, dishonoring. And an unwillingness to admit that we are wrong and ask forgiveness. This is what that survey came up with when it looked at families across the country and said, what are the top 10 most dishonoring acts in the home? So the question is, why? Why do we belittle others? Why is it that a husband belittles his wife? Or why does a wife insult her husband? Or why do parents often put their children down? Why do they call them rugrats? You know, ever heard somebody call their kids rugrats? I don't know how it makes you feel, but some kids can be insulted by that. Sometimes it's because of what we learned from our parents. Sometimes it's about ego. Some people feel better about themselves. They don't love themselves. They can make themselves bigger when they can put somebody else down. But that's the problem. The problem of dishonor. What's the solution? Because a lot of times people have a miserable family. Absolutely miserable circumstances in their family because they don't love each other. They don't treat each other with honor. So putting honor back in the home. What's the solution to this? Well, the first thing that I want to say is that honor is not based on a feeling. It is a decision. Generally, people do not decide how much value they're going to attach. Well, generally, people do decide how much value they're going to attach to something. It does not decide itself. Again, we'll look at 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 23. Remember when Paul was telling the Corinthians that they needed to attach value, more value to the older members, those who were weaker. Remember, Paul says, those members of the body which we deem less honorable, on these we bestow more abundant honor. You see, that's a decision. That's an act. You decide that that person is more valuable than what you had in the past. These we bestow more abundant honor, and our less presentable members become much more presentable. Whereas our more presentable members have no need of it, but God has so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to that member which lacks. And so honor is a decision. You know, if a Chevy and a Mercedes pull up to a stoplight, the Chevy doesn't gaze over enviously at the Mercedes and wish that he was worth as much as Mercedes. He doesn't do that. He doesn't care. Silver, if you put silver and gold next to one another, the silver doesn't cry itself to sleep at night because it's not as valuable as gold. You know, it doesn't care. We are the ones that attach value to something. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 29, again, when Paul wrote the Philippians about this brother Epaphroditus, he said, receive him then in the Lord with all joy and hold men like him in high regard. You attach honor to this man. Someone came up with a great idea one time. They decided to take all of the old sticks of furniture sitting around in people's garages in their attics and call them antiques. And you know what happened? People started buying up these old pieces of junk at ridiculous prices. And they pay amounts that are astronomical to restore these items to a condition, and they pay prices that exceed the values or the prices of new furniture. What happened to make all these old sticks and pieces of furniture so valuable? We decided to attach more value to them, did we not? We decided that they were more valuable. And so we need to apply this to the family. What if What if the husband came home and the family met him at the door and the kids cheered, "Dad's home," and the wife fixed herself up to look presentable for the dad instead of having her hair in curlers and looking like she just, you know, well, you'd feel pretty honored, wouldn't you? What if the wife, when she came home from buying groceries, if she's met at the door with the red carpet and she's ushered in to sit down to take a rest, and the kids brought the groceries in and the husband, and he put them up? What if the child comes home from school and the parents drop what they're doing and they take them out for pizza or a movie or ice cream just to celebrate because they are their children, you know, or glad to have them as their children? What would the average husband or wife or child think if that happened? They'd probably go out and check the mailbox, see if they'd come home to the right house or not. You know, I'm not saying that you have to do these particular things, you know, but they're not all inappropriate. It's not inappropriate to do that. But it's the attitude of honor and it's the actions that follow if a family is going to have a warm environment and not one that's described like at the beginning of the story. God has already decided that every human being is valuable, immensely valuable. If He hadn't decided to attach value to us, we would be of no more worth than the nearest sack of sand. But in Psalms 8, David, in his psalm, said something that describes the kind of value that God placed upon men. In Psalm 8, David said, "O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth, who have displayed your splendor above the heavens. From the mouth of infants and nursing babes you have established strength because of your adversaries to make the enemy and the revengeful cease. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you even take thought of him, and the son of man that you care for him? And yet you have made him a little lower than God, and you crown him with glory and majesty, and you make him to rule over the works of your hands, and you put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beasts of the field." David is overwhelmed because he sees the greatness of God, he sees the world he created, and he said, "What am I that you ever even give a thought to me?" And God, he says, you have elevated man to a position that's very honorable, valuable. We are valuable because God has decided that we are. And somebody says, "Well, what if people don't deserve my honor? What if they don't deserve it? You know, my spouse has been unfaithful. Or my spouse is kind of a hateful person. Or my child's been kind of rebellious." I mean, you may think of the prodigal son who took his inheritance and squandered it on riotous living, Luke chapter 16. And what did Peter say in 1 Peter 2, verse 17? He said, "Honor all men." Honor all men. There are two passages I want you to look at. Look in 1 John chapter 4, verse 10 and 11. It may be true that someone doesn't deserve our honor. Maybe their behavior may deem them unworthy of honor in a sense. But I want you to think about this passage, 1 John chapter 4, verse 10 and 11, where it says, "By this the love of God was manifested in us, that God has sent His only begotten Son into the world so that we might live through Him. In this is love, not that we love God, but that He loved us and sent His Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, then we ought to love one another." And Romans chapter 5, verse 8 says, "But God demonstrates His own love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." Do I deserve honor? I don't deserve it based on who I am and what I've done. But God honored me and treated me as valuable even when I was the most undeserving. His sacrifice for me was not dependent on how I treated Him. He treated me better than what I deserved. We're all sinners. We're all guilty. And that puts every person in this world on an equal plane, does it not? We are all sinners. None of us deserve honor by virtue of our own goodness. And that thinking in those terms has a bearing on how we treat each other in the family. I need to love my spouse, and I need to love my child. Even men that day, based on their conduct, they may not deserve a lot of honor. And it is not conditional. The way I treat someone should not be conditional on their conduct. We love them. We do as best for them because He first loved us. Now, does honoring mean that we condone their sin? That we condone their conduct? No, it doesn't. In fact, sometimes to love someone means to discipline the one who we value. We discipline our children because we do value them. We want them to become all that God wants them to be. And so we correct them. We do what's best for them when they're not doing what they ought to do. But only when we see ourselves as recipients of God's undeserved favor can we decide to love and honor those in our family, even if they don't always deserve, based on their conduct, our honor. Look at one or two other passages, and then the lesson will be yours. 1 Peter chapter 3. I want you to know that showing honor in the family is also honoring God. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. The manner in which we deal with others, this verse is going to teach us, has a significant bearing on how God will regard us. He says, to sum up, all of you be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil, or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you are called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. For the one who desires life, to love and to see good days, must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. And he must turn away from evil and do good, and he must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and his ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. In the context, the manner in which we deal with others has a significant bearing on the way God is going to regard us. And the application is to the family in this context. In verse 7, he says, you husbands, live in the same way. No, you husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman. And show her, what? Honor, as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. And so God's ear is open to our prayers, but that's dependent on the way we value those He has put into our care. And that starts at home. So, conclusion. In the Old Testament, many times, God sort of lets us peer into the windows of families. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob's windows are left open for us to look at. And there are a lot of problems. And most always it was because they didn't obey God, but sometimes it was because they didn't honor one another. They didn't value each other as they should. Who could forget the rivalry between Sarah and Hagar? Who could forget the rivalry between Jacob and Esau, or between Leah and Rachel, or between Jacob's sons, or even between Jacob's or David's boys? Think about when God lets us look into the windows of those families in the Old Testament, and we see problems. And many of those are because they did not love God in some instances, and because they didn't love one another and treat others as they would want to be treated. So what would a person see if they were to peer into your window? What does God see when He observes parents and children around the table? Love, respect, consideration, valuing, honor. If not, then we need to put honor back in our homes and work. That's a constant work. It is not a one-time thing. It is a constant, daily decision. Well, if you need to become a Christian tonight, this would be your opportunity. If you need the prayers of the congregation and its help, this would maybe be a time that you would be able to talk to the group and ask them to pray for you. I hope that this lesson will be kind of a practical lesson to give you a thought about a practical part of life, how we need to show honor in our families so that we might also show honor to God. Tonight, if we can help you in any way, we encourage you to come forward and let us know that as we stand and sing.